The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, I'm Rabbi Rami, and this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today, Jamal Yogis, is an award-winning author of three memoirs, Saltwater Buddha, The Fear Project, and All Our Waves Are Water, the last of which was rated Best Book of the Year by Spirituality and Health magazine. Not that I'm jealous, Jamal, but, you know, I noticed it. He's a graduate of Columbia Journalism School, and his work has appeared in The Washington Post, The Atlantic, ESPN Magazine, and a lot of other publications. Jamal's first children's book, and that's what we're going to be talking about for most of this show, his first children's book is called Mop Rides the Waves of Life, and it came out this summer. Jamal and his family lives in Canada. He's got his wife, Amy, and they have three kids. Jamal Yogis, welcome to Essential Conversations.
Thank you, Rabbi Rami. Nice to be here.
Well, I'm really happy to talk to you again. I'm delighted with this book, Mop Rides the Waves. You've explored in your memoirs, you know, a lot of your spiritual journey, but just for those who haven't read those or haven't heard you before, because you've been with us on this show before, give us a little sense of your spiritual journey. You know, I know that your parents were associated with Parahansa Yogananda.
That's right.
And so were you drawn to Yogananda's teachings, or what's your relationship with all of that?
Yeah, ish. I mean, when you're growing up, you're not as much as I guess you can be drawn to the things your parents are introducing you to. Full story, yeah. I mean, we would go to Sunday school at Ananda up in Grass Valley as kids. And my parents, my mom, Jewish, my dad, Catholic, but both of them had gotten into meditation and yoga on their own. And were raising us sort of, you know, not super committed to any one path, but that was where we would go when we went to a spiritual event. I just sort of took it in stride. Sometimes I wouldn't say I felt called to it by any means, but then I started getting into trouble in high school. And my first inkling of really being sort of into yoga and meditation on my own, I won a raffle to a Native American retreat. I was at it was really a random thing. I was just at an event with my parents and I entered this raffle, this Sioux tribe, and they were having an event at Mount Madonna Center in Santa Cruz Mountains. And that happened to be Baba Haridas, where he was living and teaching, and his community is. And I was about 16. And I wandered into, I've actually never told this story in any of my books or any radio. I woke up early one morning and I didn't know that it was a yoga retreat center where I was. And I wandered into this gym and it so happened that Baba Haridas was teaching a teen retreat. And so there were a bunch of teenagers sitting around doing yoga with this bearded Indian man who hadn't spoken, I didn't know, in like 50 years. He had a vow of silence and he taught on a chalkboard. And I was just into skating and snowboarding and girls. But something about entering this room with Baba Haridas, it was a spiritual awakening. Like I felt myself enter this, like his aura, I guess you would say. It just, the room shifted and there was like, everything felt different. And from, and that really, like, I didn't get into yoga at that point, but it was like an aha moment that I think planted a seed. And then, you know, I went back to my life and I was into things that high school kids are into. And I started getting into more trouble. I got a DUI and then I was suspended from school. I wasn't a particularly bad kid. I was just seemed to get caught a lot. And Anyway, it felt like my life was ruined and, you know, it was high drama. And I ran away to Maui and I took a one-way ticket and my whole goal was to learn to surf. I had this vision that if I learned to surf, like things would be right again. We lived in Sacramento. And needless to say, being broke and 16 in Hawaii was not paradise. I had no way of getting around, but I did buy a surfboard. I did start surfing. And I also, when that happened, I think because I was finally struggling, really struggling for the first time in my life, lonely, hungry, all of the above, that's when something kicked in where I was like, I need to meditate. This is something that was introduced to me. And I actually really needed it. I didn't have money to go see a psychologist. So I started just trying it out and experimenting. And so surfing and meditation, I began at the same time, sucked at both of them. Just, I was a miserable surfer and I felt like I couldn't sit still for more than 5 minutes. But there was a connection between them that I made right away where one, my mind was rolling thoughts through, stormy thoughts, nonstop, like the ocean, and I didn't have much control. And there was a moment where I duck-dived a wave, and I realized a wave that I thought I was going to get thumped by, and I realized, oh, there's a way to move with the ocean. If you understand it, you can be in a ferocious energy and actually enjoy it. And then that was a launching pad to really, like, becoming crazy passionate about surfing. I also lived in a Buddhist monastery after high school and became passionate about Buddhism, studied in college. And then those two just kept making connections latently for me. And when I became a writer, I started writing about it. And so that's a thread that runs through all my books.
Yeah, clearly that's true. And you were writing about it for adults, but not this time.
Right.
This time you wrote a children's book, Mop Rides the Waves of Life. So I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan of spiritually oriented children's picture books. And it seems to me, now I've never written one, that the author of such a book has to have a pretty clear sense of reality to write one. Little kids know when you're BSing them, I think, which is why I've never written one. Because I can get away with my stuff with adults, but you know. My grandson knows better. So what, you know, beyond, and maybe there is no beyond, but what beyond having three little, you know, boys of your own drew you to write a children's book?
Well, I'd always liked, similar to you, I've always liked children's books. You know, I think as I heard myself talking on the page enough after three books, I realized there's, what I'm saying isn't all that complicated. I'm just spinning these webs around these moments of insight that are actually pretty simple, you know, and it's, but you try to create a visceral experience for the reader. If I stripped it down to what I am essentially trying to say, I think that's what got into Mop Rides the Waves of Life, or at least a good portion of it. And I didn't plan that though. I have tinkered with writing kids' books since way before I had kids, when I was, I think, like 17. I just liked to draw and doodle always, and made a little children's book, and had made one for my first son, for our first son, for fun. And this one felt like there was something that needed to happen more with it. And it was really neat because it arose organically. One of the things I like to do that I really see as like a spiritual practice or meditation is doodle. I just, sometimes it's free writing and then it turns into doodling. And I'm not a particularly great artist, but I draw these stick figures. And of course, because I'm a surfer, it's fun to draw waves. And I started drawing this curly haired surfer stick figure. And he just brought me a lot of joy. Like there was something about him that I just liked the way he looked. I liked, you know, having fun with him. And then I started giving him some more frames, you know, on the page, and it started evolving into this story. And it was so simple, you know, it's a very simple book. And when it really poured out, and then I said, well, I should really, you know, see if anyone wants to publish this. And I was fortunate that that I found a publisher right away, and which I know is not the experience for most children's books writers, because I tried it before with and was unsuccessful. So,
yeah, it's a tough really business. Pleased. Now, the illustrations in Mop Rides the Waves of Life, those aren't yours, though. Those are Matthew Allen's, right?
Those are Matt Allen's, and he did a beautiful job. I was kind of attached to my illustrations, my stick figures. I was going for like a Shel Silverstein vibe.
Right.
And they did, I don't know if my publisher was just being nice, briefly entertained having me be the illustrator, but they said, let's just like see if anybody else is, you know, and
is available.
Matt, you know, blew us away and his watercolors.
The illustrations are great. So you know, this is a podcast, obviously, and people can't see you. But unlike most of our guests who they can't see, you're the cover boy for the September-October issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. You're on the cover holding up your, it's your oldest son, I think.
Yes.
And when you see the picture of you and then you take a look at Mop Rides the Waves of Life, you and Mop have the same hair. So my assumption, it's hard not to notice. So is it a fair assumption that just between the two of us, you know, your mom?
I didn't think of it like that, but it was funny. I was being interviewed right when Mop came out and I got asked this question and I said, I wasn't trying to make Mop autobiographical, although there are autobiographical aspects. I got teased for having big hair as a kid. My friends used to say, don't look at his hair, when I was running down the soccer field, because my hair alone would fake you out. And I would get injured by that. Emotionally, even though I tried to laugh it off, and one time did get into a fight with my best friend at the time, who, by the way, now is a UFC fighter, which is funny. But so he really could have beat me up back then too. And but he sort of let me pound him a little bit because he saw how frustrated I was by this constant teasing. And but this other writer asked me that, and I realized that. When I became a dad, I remember as deeply in love with my children as I am, and I was when our first child showed up, I felt like I had died. I'm somebody who's deeply attached to my freedom and and my ability to get in my car and drive down the coast with my surfboards and my guitar and, you know, meditate when I want to meditate and write when I want to write. And I built this life around, you know, freedom. My whole, you know, wasn't rich, but I had freedom. I'd figured that out. And then all of a sudden, all that was gone. You know, it's like I'm on the clock 24/7. And I felt like, well, what happened to the, you know, where's my life now? Now I'm a dad. That's all I am. And, anyway, I got this feeling that, you know, Mop is this free kid who loves to surf, and I don't have as much time as I used to do that. And so I'm looking at him as kind of the reincarnation of that self that died into our family.
There you go. I mean, that you're making a case for being a celibate monk. So you don't get tied down, but. You love your kids. You love
your wife.
It's
a good life, the monk life, but is the dad life. And I've come to, Rami, I've come to really embrace it, but it's still a challenge to transition.
Yeah. Well, I get it. My son is in his 40s and I have, like I said, a 4-year-old grandson, and I see them both almost every day. If not my son, then my daughter-in-law, but my grandson, Jack, is here almost every day. And it's always in the middle of something, you know, I'm working on something and, oh, can we come over? And, you know, you can't say no. So I get it.
It doesn't end.
No, right. It doesn't end. Though I tell you, being a grandfather, and I know this is completely cliche, but being a grandfather and being a dad are two different things. And though you have to go through one to be the other, I really like being a grandfather. So let's talk a little bit about the book. One of the things in the book, Mop learns to meditate. His mom teaches him how to meditate. And immediately he makes the connection between sitting and meditation. And I'm totally, totally impressed that Mop and his mom can sit in full lotus. That's very impressive. But he makes this connection between meditation and floating on his surfboard. Now, I looked this up because I was just curious. what I found was you can teach a five-year-old how to surf. That's what it says on the internet, which is of course, knows everything. So I'm wondering, because in the book, I would guess Mop is around seven in your imagination. I don't know. So I'm curious about your experience. I think your kids are too little to teach them to meditate, let alone surf. But have you had any experience trying to teach first graders, second graders, third graders how to meditate?
Yeah, I have. And I think I picture Mop between kind of, you know, seven and nine. Like there's often the kids a little older than the target audience. So you get that wish fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And I think, one, you know, we live in San Francisco normally. We've just moved to Canada, but our school in San Francisco taught mindfulness, and they would do a little bell every morning and just have a mindful moment. So it was, you know, about 30 seconds or a minute. And my kids can do that. But I've never really pushed it beyond that. We have done yoga classes and things, but it's always seemed a little silly to me to ask kids that age to sit still, to try to force it on them. What we do is do breathing. So, you know, birthday candles, when you have a big emotion, let's try, you know, blowing out five candles, or following your breath if you're having trouble going to sleep. So kind of inserting it into moments so it plants a seed. That's really where I've gone with it. But ironically, of course, my kids, like every other kid, just want to get their hands on a phone if they can. And yeah. So For Mop, I made these little YouTube videos for people who want to follow up and give their kids like a 1 minute meditation, with some of them have a little like repetitive mantra, or others are a little more active where you're doing some pranayama kind of thing. And my kids love doing those because they think it's hilarious. The dad's on YouTube. And so the most successful meditation I've ever seen, observed them doing, is when we put YouTube dad on the TV. And sure enough, one day I walked into the living room and they were watching it on their own, and they were all sitting cross-legged on the floor.
Oh, that's funny.
And I thought, oh, well, this is never going to happen again, but this is something. Oh,
that is great. So if people want to see those, how would they find them on YouTube?
If you Google probably Mop Rides, The Waves of Life on YouTube, there is a channel where, one, the book itself is up for free on YouTube, because I put it up early during the pandemic. Our publisher let us do that for kids who are at home, because we figured this could be a great tool. And then if you sort of follow that, usually YouTube comes up, you know, click that channel and there's great. Some other videos.
That's very cool. So we're, you know, running out of time here, but I got a couple questions I'd love to just run by you quickly. Really great children's books are really for adults, or at least speak to adults also. And I think that's true if Mop Rides the Waves of Life. So could this be an introduction to meditation for adults?
I've gotten a lot of feedback from adults saying this book is really for me. I read this to my child, you know, as much as I can, because at the end of the day, especially during quarantine, you've had some angry outbursts. And one of the things Mop learns is that angry waves are okay. Stormy waves are natural, and that falling is the best way to learn. So I think that gives us adults at the end of a hard day, like, oh, I wasn't perfect today, but what can I learn? And sort of a little self-compassion. And then also hopefully to be able to just come back to your practice. Because I mean, for me with meditation, my practice itself is pretty simple. So I just need those reminders of why it's so valuable. Because when you get busy, you kind of say, well, I could shove that aside. You know, I don't need that 20 minutes today because I'm going to get more done. And then my hope is that a book like this, you pick it up and you say, oh, yeah, I can practice this as well. Because it's not something you master. It's ongoing, I think, at least in my experience. I haven't mastered it yet.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Let me ask you one last thing and we'll bring this to a close. You know, I was reading the book. I mean, it's, you know, it's a children's book, so it's not like I'm taking an hour. It reads very quickly. It's beautifully done. And one of the things that speaks to me is the central metaphor of the ocean, riding the waves, the whole surfing thing. Now, I don't surf, but in my own personal theology, the metaphor of the ocean and the wave is the central metaphor, you know, just putting it in Western terms. And for me, God mm-hmm. is this infinite ocean, and you and I and all creation are waves of that ocean. So we're all extensions of this divine reality. So as a way of closing out our conversation, do you have a central metaphor that you use about that reflects your deepest understanding of reality in 2 seconds or less?
Well, yeah. Well, first off, it's never too late to learn to serve, Rabbi. And second, yes, that is my central metaphor. Exactly what you described. I might put it in terms of Buddha nature, but I'll use the G word too. I mean, it is, you know, we're sailing the seas of divinity, and we're all connected in that ocean. And so there's something really beautiful to me about that. And I come back to it again and again, you know, that Rumi quote, "You're not a drop in the ocean. You are the entire ocean in a single drop," has always been kind of a koan to me, on a spiritual level and kind of like a quantum physics level of just something to reflect on. And I don't claim to understand it fully, but it's something I come back to again and again. Absolutely.
Well, you've got company in that kind of understanding. And just as it's never too late to learn how to surf, it's never too late to become a spiritual master. You just got to write another mop book.
That's the key. I think one more and I'll be there. Yeah.
That's it. Then you're there. Our guest today, Jamal Yogis, is the author of Mop Rides the Waves of Life. You can learn more about his work on his website, jamalyogis.net. Jamal, thank you so much for talking with us on Essential Conversations.
Thanks, Rabbi Renan. Take care.
Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is the bi-weekly podcast of Spirituality and Health magazine. If you like Essential Conversations, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast app. You can also follow me on Spirituality and Health's website, where I now write a regular column called Roadside Musings, and on my new podcast, Conversations on the Egg. And don't forget to subscribe to the print magazine as well. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker Truppiano, and our executive producer is Catherine Drury Wagner. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.